This is the audio that accompanies the Kay versus Taylor Gifts, Kay Berry versus Taylor Gifts case. We're still talking about copyright infringement, still focused on 106.1 and kind of 106.2, right? Do we have infringement or unauthorized copying or the creation of a derivative work? Our two steps are still the same. Is there actual copying or copying in fact, where we might look at the level of access and striking similarity, even similarities that are not of protectable aspects of the work? And then finally, whether there's improper appropriation or not. And so in this case, we've got Kay Berry versus Taylor that deals with these stones. Unfortunately, it sounds like these are potentially kind of headstones that are used to commemorate loved ones or kind of better times, etc. And they are stones where, say they're not poems, but kind of sayings are stamped on the stones with a certain font and in certain lines, right? And the question becomes, if the alleged copying by Taylor of Kay Berry's Garden Accent Rocks is infringement or not. And so the first slide, I've got a couple of stones. It actually turns out the only one that maybe is a Kay Berry one is the one on the far right that's actually from their website. If tears could build a stairway and memories a lane, I'd walk right up to heaven and bring you home again. Heartening, I guess. And then the other ones were other ones I found under Google Images. Don't bother me while I'm fishing unless you brought beer. I guess that's a common saying. But Kay Berry pushes these stones out, and Taylor starts to market and sell a memory stone, which is similar to the Kay Berry sculpture number 646 stone. They're both rectangular objects with a stone-like appearance, and they have the exact same verse that appears on both of them. It's also laid out in the same five-line format. Each word also begins with a capital letter, and the entire verse appears in a right-leaning format. So we've got some pretty close similarities, right? It's a poem. Five-line format, if you go to the second page, five-line format, capital lines on each one, italics on each one. And so the question becomes is whether we've got infringement or not. And our two steps here would be whether there's actual copying and improper appropriation. For actual copying, now the one thing I'll say is the court here kind of conflates this and doesn't really kind of nicely step through both steps. But if we were at the actual copying stage, we certainly have striking similarity. I mean, that's a lot of similarity. Exact poem, five-line format, capital letters on each line, and italics. High striking similarity. My gut is they would have access if this is sold in the public market. It's a competitor or somebody in a semi-similar market. Probably have good evidence of actual copying. I think the real question then becomes, right, is whether we actually have improper appropriation. And that seems to be where the court focuses its energy, right? And that is, do we have improper appropriation or not? And so let's think about what was copied and whether what was copied is protectable or not. Is copying the poem an improper appropriation? That can't be the case. It's a public domain poem. Even Kay Berry admits we didn't make this poem up. Does putting it in a five-line format or with capital letters in each line and all italics, right? Is that something that's protectable or not, right? I think the court here is inferring that that is just not enough to say that that was taking something that was actual original or not, right? But one question becomes is, okay, what if I put all these things together, right? Do I have enough for improper appropriation? And here we get a little bit of an introduction of another potential standard that's used by courts to determine improper appropriation, and that's this kind of lay audience standard. That is, if I have this kind of appeals to the kind of relevant audience is what's appealing to about one thing is appealing to the other, right? So if somebody takes a look at Kay Berry's and then takes a look at Taylor Gift's, do we have this kind of lay observer thinking that there was improper appropriation between the two, right? And we've seen this ordinary lay person use also when we looked at design patent infringement. And here the lower court said no, but it turns out the appellate court says, you know, I think there's an factual issue here, right? That is, that a factual issue to say, you know what, I think what was similar between the two of these is both something that's protectable, particularly in the perspective from a lay observer as to whether this was an unlawful appropriation. I think the problem here is it's the combination of all of these elements. We might have something that is fairly thin copyright, but it sounds like the copying that was done is pretty similar between these two things, almost close to being the exact same. And so we have copyright infringement. And it looks like the still question mark when this gets remanded back down is as to whether there's improper appropriation or not between the two. And so on the next slide, slide three, I've got some slides for us to kind of think about whether we've got copyright infringement or not. And so here we have two paintings. The one on the left is the earlier work. The one on the right is the later work. We could see whether we think there's certainly something protectable in the one on the left because protection is so easy. It's fixed in a painting. Is there some originality? Yes, it's of a nature scene, but certainly some of the shadings and brush strokes, etc., are original. There's certainly some level of expression if I take the totality of everything together. And the one on the right, it clearly is not an exact copy, but we could determine whether we've got copyright infringement or not. And so if we were looking to determine whether we've got copyright infringement, the first thing we would ask ourselves, is there actual copying? And so one question would be access. So we need to have some evidence as to how accessible the painting on the left is. I'll just tell you that I found it through Google Images, which would be at least some evidence of access. And then the question becomes striking similarity. If you start looking closely at these are pretty similar. The juxtaposition of the bird is the same. It's on a very similar type of tree. I don't know if this is a dogwood or something. There are some slight differences, but it's pretty close to being similar. So I probably could get at actual copying. The harder part's going to be improper appropriation, because if we think about the one on the left, particularly because it's a nature scene, probably low level of originality here, because these are kind of typical elements that you would see in an animal painting. I don't know why I keep picking animals as our examples in these different cases, thinking back to the bee pens, and the idea of a bird on a branch. The fact that there's a lot of fact in this. This is what trees look like. These are what birds look like. We also probably are going to have the line between idea and expression be pretty low. And so when we start comparing between these two, it becomes difficult to say whether protectable elements were taken or not. Now, the one thing about looking at both these is that, let's say if we took the approach that the appellate court takes in Kay Berry versus Taylor, and we say, well, what is appealing to the lay observer about the left one and the right one? Are those similar? Right? Probably so, which would actually push toward improper appropriation. But if we did this in a little more of a methodical approach, kind of this abstraction filtration comparison analysis, it's really a question of how thick or thin of a copyright we think the one on the left has as to whether we've got infringement or not. The similarities are pretty strong here, and so the more and more things I kind of add together to say, okay, well, what was copied was not only, you know, the bird in its profile, but on a dogwood, the dogwood having the same number of branches and the same number of leaves, etc., we probably could find a copyright infringement in this case. At least send it to a fact finder like they did in Kay Berry versus Taylor. If we go to the next slide, I don't know why we keep talking about vampires. And so we have these two books, Twilight, which was written before 50 Shades of Grey. And for those who maybe know or don't know, 50 Shades of Grey actually started as a fan fiction of Twilight, taking the two characters, I do not even know what their names are, from Twilight. And if you actually click on the 50 Shades of Grey picture, you'll get taken to a website about the lost history of the 50 Shades of Grey. That is, that the author of the 50 Shades of Grey started writing the basis for 50 Shades of Grey as a fan fiction called Master of the Universe, which was a fan fiction using the actual players of Twilight, and then eventually taking that as a basis and producing 50 Shades of Grey. And so you could say, okay, well, fine, that means that we've got some good evidence of access and potentially copying, right? The question becomes whether we have improper appropriation. So if you click on the one on the right, the Twilight, you'll get a part of a blog post of some kind where somebody lists all the similarities between the two. Not only similarities to the characters, but also similarities to all the different aspects of the individuals and everything that they might do or don't do together. A family so happy the guys found someone, characters from totally different worlds and backgrounds, guys never sleep, girls sleep a lot, confession of marriage comes as a surprise. There's a meadow, I guess, in both of them. The guys are car lovers. Guys leave girls speechless. The thought here being is, okay, so do we have enough for striking similarity? If we have all of these similarities, right, possibly so, I think then becomes the difficulty is whether we've got an improper appropriation, right? If we did the lay observer or audience test, right, probably high likelihood that we might have infringement here. If we're a little more methodical and we say, look, I'm looking for similarities or copies of things that are protectable, that might be a little bit harder, right? Because a lot of the stuff maybe that 50 Shades of Grey copies from Twilight are themes that are not even original to Twilight, right? A meadow, right? Or guys love cars, right? And combining both those in the same story. It might turn out that a lot of the stuff that is in 50 Shades of Grey similar to Twilight are ideas, not expression. And so if someone took an abstraction, filtration, comparison analysis where they really tried to tear out before having the jury decide whether there are similarities, all the things that are not protectable, we probably would not have infringement in that particular case. It'd probably be a tough case, particularly since one started as fan fiction between the two. The other thing when talking about this shows that not only do courts conflate actual copying and improper appropriation to kind of a singular analysis, a lot of courts take different approaches to the improper appropriation part of it. Sometimes courts take this lay audience test where they say, okay, are the things that are similar or the things that would appeal to or a lay audience member would recognize, which might actually be the case here, right, where you'd find infringement, versus other courts that are a little more methodical and say, okay, look, the jury can't find similarities based on things that are not protectable and go through the analysis as to what is or is not protectable. The next slide kind of focuses on 106.2, this ability for me as a copyright holder to exclude others who prepare derivative works. And so the question becomes is, what's a derivative work? The last slide has a definition there. A derivative work is a work based upon one or more existing works, and it's recast, transformed, or adapted. When we are looking at all the copies we've looked at so far, alleged copies, Kanye's alleged copy of Vince P, Taylor Gift's copy of Kay Berry's Garden Stone, 50 Shades of Grey copy of Twilight. Since a lot of these are not exact copies, they could arguably also be considered derivative works. But the analysis is very similar for 106.2 versus 106.1. I need actual copying, and we also look for improper appropriation. It just might turn out in the derivative work context, I've made a lot more changes or additions or recasting the original work in a different context, right? So if I made a movie that was similar to the Twilight book without authorization, right, maybe they would pursue me under 106.2 that I made an unauthorized derivative work. I have a feeling they would also say that I made an unauthorized copy as well, because there'd be elements of the work that's been copied, but it might also be a violation of 106.2. And so that's the kind of end of the K. Berry versus Taylor Gifts discussion.